Hello and welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Eudalie Wickham Ashby. And today, as we celebrate the month of the disabled, as we celebrate International Women's Day and so many significant days and periods during the month of March, I want to take the time to also recognize another bright trident striving as we celebrate this month. Yes, you have heard about her. You've kept track of her educational prowess and, of course, her recent admission to the bar. So we are celebrating. And today we will have a conversation with Janelle Odell from a different perspective. Welcome to the program, Janelle.
Thank you. Good morning.
So today, Janelle, I want us to really talk a bit more from the perspective of being a woman with a disability, being a mother, and how these two are connected. How do you think society is viewing you? And what this experience is like for you now as a young woman, a young mother. So tell us about how do you feel as a young woman with a disability? Is that confidence level there? Have you been knocked down too many times to get back up?
Okay, so being a young person, a young woman with a disability is very challenging. There are a lot of obstacles in my way. There are a lot of people, there are a lot of different policies, mentalities trying to stop me from achieving, trying to stop me from living a quote-unquote normal life. And yes, I have gone through a lot in my life. I had a lot of criticisms, as I said, a lot of barriers, but I try not to let that stop me. I try to use the criticisms and use these barriers to help propel me along, to fuel my energy so that I can go forward and say, well, you think I can't do it? I'm going to prove you wrong. So while it is difficult, I will say that I am a proud person, a proud woman with a disability, because I have come this far and I continue to light the way and shine on the path for others coming along and show other people what I am capable of.
I appreciate the fact that you're sharing about some of the barriers, some of the criticisms that have been leveled at you as a young woman with a disability. Because sometimes when we excel, people forget that there are some challenges we experience. So what would you say has been one of your greatest obstacles to deal with?
I would say the greatest challenge I've gone through in my life was the educational system. You know, it started way back when I was a young girl, and I had difficulties doing the common interest examination because, you know, blind children in Barbados don't generally do the common interest examination. And even though the policy was not in place to allow for it, the mentality is also set as a barrier. There are people telling me constantly, you know, you won't be able to get it done. This is going to be so hard for you. How could you get through secondary school? You won't survive in secondary school. And then there were different teachers. My parents wanted me to go to lessons for the common entrance. So many teachers didn't want to teach me because they said they didn't know how to teach me. I started so many lessons and had a dropout because I either wasn't learning or the people just were being very negative towards me. So it started from a very young age and it didn't even stop there. You know, when I went into Barbados Community College at first, they had their second thoughts and their doubts whether they were going to cater to me. Went into law school, they questioned whether they could cater to me. And it's just something I had to deal with throughout my whole entire life as it relates to the education system in Barbados. And in the Caribbean, because the law school is in Trinidad.
How would you say some of these obstacles, some of these challenges can be removed, because I believe they can be for, you know, many more children with disabilities and not just persons with vision impairments. But I venture to say that children with other types of disabilities face the same challenges. How do you think we can remove some of these barriers?
Well, one thing I would really like to see is a, you know, legislation implementing equal opportunities for disabled people as it relates to the education system, as it relates to job opportunities in every aspect. When there's legislation in place, then people will have no choice but to comply. And that is one step. But also we need to sensitize people that are working in public places, teachers, sensitize different workers and stuff in society. And parents also have a part to play. We need to empower our children. We need to first be empowered ourselves, I would say. Parents need to be empowered so that they would know anything is possible for their children. They need to empower the children as well. So those are some things I think would make a difference in society.
Well, some people may argue the point that several teachers have been trained in special needs education and are deployed in the various schools. How do you treat this situation then?
Yes, some teachers have been trained in special education, but I guess they need to be more informed on a more personal level how these things could affect them, because you would, even though you have been taught as a teacher, you might not be able to put yourself in a position to understand what that person might be going through, what you might be going through if you were the parent of that child, what that child might have to deal with. So we need to have more hands-on and personal training to sensitize them to the more personal aspects of having a disability and what is out there, the different barriers and the impact they could have on these persons.
Okay, Janelle, do you think that social workers or counselors alongside guidance counselors should be in schools to help individual children, particularly children with disabilities or maybe those who have some injuries or sicknesses?
Yes, I believe that would help a lot, because one thing is when you have a disability or when there are a lot of challenges in your way, you're constantly being knocked down. It plays on your self-esteem. It plays on your mind, and that affects every aspect of your life. When you start to question who you are as a person, what you are capable of, that can really affect a person. What they do, their school work, their lives, even at home with their families. Some persons may even have suicidal thoughts. So I think, yes, having social workers and counselors working along children, especially with children with disabilities, will be very helpful.
Okay, lovely. Now, primary and secondary school settings are very different to college and university. Share with us what your experience was like at Barbados Community College and the University of the West Indies, both the Cave Hill and the St. Augustine campuses. Was it challenging for you as an individual being on your own technically now?
I would say that surprisingly, it was a lot easier than going through secondary school, because in secondary school, the books that were used, the equipment, they didn't have the necessary technology. The books, they weren't in PDF format. It was difficult to have access to them. I had to be brailing things out every night. But when I got to Barbados Community College, when I was at UE, when I was at law school, the books were in PDF format. And I could just maybe buy some books, read the books online using various text-to-speech programs and able to live and study as a quote-unquote normal individual. Being away from home when I was in Trinidad for the Huguenin Law School was a different story, but it wasn't the school of itself. It was, I guess, existing outside, away from my family. That was difficult, as I had to adapt to, you know, a new life basically alone.
And what was that experience like, being on your own for the first time as a young adult, away from your parents, your brother, and other support systems?
It was very difficult. Luckily, I had two roommates, two friends of mine. We met at UBKville, and we decided that we would stick together and do everything together. So it wasn't, as we stick together, you know, we would get groceries together, we would go places together, go to school together. But at times, things when I needed personal help, maybe going to the doctor and stuff, and I didn't want to depend on a friend in a strange country, it was a bit difficult. And then dealing with different pressures and stuff from school, pressures from being in a strange country, and I didn't have my parents to run to, that was difficult as well. And then the whole thing about just being in a strange country as a blind person, afraid to go certain places because I don't know what to expect or how to get there or what to do. That was a bit difficult. Being fearful, because you know, when here in Trinidad, everybody warn you, be careful, be careful, be careful. Not wanting to leave home, that can also play on your mind. I did play on my mind, being stuck at home most of the time. School, home, church, school, home, church, occasionally the supermarket. That really did play on my mind. And sometimes it was very depressing, and not having the support system there that I can run to, just have to call them and hope they pick up each time. That was difficult.
What about the disability unit at St. Augustine's campus to support students with disabilities? Was that beneficial to you?
Well, UWIDA Law School isn't actually on the St. Augustine's campus. It is a part of university, but isn't on the same campus. So while I would have reached out to them and they would have come and give me mobility training throughout the school, that was the extent of the assistance. They would have also spoken to the university about how to provide exams for me. But other than that, that was the extent of the assistance I would have received over there.
Okay. What about your trust level? Do you think that your willingness to trust people, because we as persons with disabilities have to really place a lot of trust in individuals to give us support, to give us help and guidance. Would you say that your trust levels went down or went up?
I would say so. Yes, I would say that I had to trust a whole lot more because I was traveling from Barbados to Trinidad and back by myself all the time. So I had to obviously be dependent on the persons in the airport, Caribbean Airlines workers, who did a wonderful job, by the way, Barbados, Caribbean Airlines people, Trinidad to a certain extent too. I would say that I had to trust a whole lot. And then obviously with my classmates, my roommates, the school, the people I interacted with, I had to trust them a whole lot. So yes, I would say this experience taught me to place my trust more in people and in myself as well.
Fabulous, fabulous. Now, Janelle, what would you say to other young people and sometimes even the older ones who may want to pursue higher education, knowing what you have learned from your own experiences going through the educational system here in Barbados and in Trinidad? What guidance, what encouragement would you give to those individuals?
If they have a goal, a dream that they want to go after, don't let the obstacles that may appear stand in your way, or the people, it may be obstacles as well, don't let them stand in your way. You might have to do your relevant research to see what is good for you, if there's technology, if you need technology to assist you, but no is never the answer. You have a goal, set your path, do your research, keep your head up, and press forward and go for it. Nothing is out of your reach.
Okay, wonderful. Tell us about one of your most memorable experiences throughout your educational journey.
I would say my most memorable experience was entering the Barbados Community College. And I had a lot of difficulties back and forth in secondary school, you know, some teachers were very willing to help me. Yes, they did all they can to help me. Others would have brought me down because this teacher didn't know if they could teach me. This teacher wasn't willing to try. I had to deal a lot with that. This teacher complained that they couldn't teach me. They were having difficulties. And that brought me down. That played on me. That beat me for a while. So entering Barbados Community College, and there was this one lady, I would remember her name forever, Miss Jean Busher Lashley. She was willing to teach me right off the bat. When she met me, she said, "Yes, do literature and I will teach you. I'll be happy to teach you." And I was like, whoa, there is somebody who's happy to teach me. I was so happy. I was over the moon. From coming from all the experiences I've had, and then somebody to welcome me with open arms, that was a very refreshing feeling.
And a significant booster to your confidence as well, because
it really was. And obviously, yes, then from then, I didn't want to disappoint her, so I was doing the extra work. I was working harder. I wanted to show her that, you know, her confidence in me wouldn't be displaced.
Right. Lovely, lovely. So you completed, and you then, during your pursuing your master's, you became pregnant. What was that experience like for you? How did you feel about becoming pregnant while you were studying?
Well, for me, I always wanted a family. I tell people all the time, I have my dreams, I have my goals, yes. I want to be a lawyer. Well, I am a lawyer now, but I always wanted to be a lawyer. I want to be an advocate. But most of all, I want to have a family. I tell people that all the time. So initially, I was very happy. It wasn't a difficult pregnancy at all. So dealing with my master's and the pregnancy, it wasn't a big issue. What was the issue was the negativity and the criticisms that I would have faced from individuals I didn't expect it from. So, yes, there are people, my family at home, they were very supportive. My mother, my father, my brother, my close family, very supportive. But then there was other people, family members and other people who just keep questioning my abilities, wondering what nonsense I'm going to do, how I'm going to make a mistake like that. I'm going to put my family through. And that really played on me and had me depressed for a very, very long time. Because whether we choose to accept it or not, words can have a very strong impact on how we think, how we feel about ourselves. And it did really negatively impact it on me because I was very depressed. I started to second guess myself. I started to wonder what if I was actually capable of doing it. And it took a very long time for me to realize, hey, I am Janelle Odell. I have done all of these things. There is nothing that I would be I wouldn't be able to do if I put my mind to it. So hey, I can be a mother, and I can be a very good mother. And as I said, it took me a while to come to that point, but when I came to that point, then I was happy again. I welcomed my son with open arms. I was happy for him. I was so happy. And to this day, I'm still very happy. Every time I hold him, every time I touch him, I'm very happy.
Well, I would say that it is indeed a very fulfilling experience to become pregnant and to deliver safely a healthy baby. And I can also identify with some of the criticisms that are leveled at not just you. And sometimes we may think that it's just us as women with disabilities, but these criticisms are also leveled at other young women and older women who may become pregnant as an older woman. So, you know, as you said, you have to fight against the negativity and the criticism to become your happy, joyful self. So after you recovered from this and you delivered your son, share now with us about how exciting and challenging it has been for you caring for him as a mother who is blind.
In the beginning stages, I would say it was pretty difficult. I had to learn everything from scratch. You know, dealing with a newborn baby can be difficult. Bathing him, I had to learn how to hold him correctly and use my hands, you know, to feel everything to make sure that, you know, he's safe.
Right.
And I'm doing it correctly. Then obviously I have to rely on my hearing a lot more to determine what he's doing at every moment, where he's doing to make sure he's keeping himself out of trouble. I have to make sure that the environment is safe at all times because I may not be able to see when he goes and takes up something and get himself into trouble. So I make sure that he's in a safe environment, and then I try to pay attention and rely on my hearing a lot more. And yeah, I just have to sit down sometimes and think about what needs to be done and then try to adjust it and adapt to my strengths.
Great. This is excellent. And I think what you're highlighting, Janelle, is the importance of really planning how to cope with and how to develop strategies to adequately care for your son without having to rely too heavily on other persons. All of us do need other people to help support us in our various tasks and roles. Yes. But it is still very important to your self-confidence and your independence to be able to care for your son, because you need to transmit that assurance, that confidence in yourself to him so that he's able to understand this is mommy and she's doing what needs to be done to me as her son.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about some of these strategies that you use to make sure he's safe. Like, you know, children like to crawl. They will have to go through that creeping stage. They will also have to go through the teething stage and things like this. How have you been able to develop your own systems to cope with this?
Okay, so he is walking and running now and troubling everything. So something I had to do, as I said, make sure the environment is safe. When we're in an environment, in a room, maybe block it off from other rooms so that he'd be confined to this area while I'm there. So I know at all times what he's doing and what he can possibly be troubling. Make sure that the things he plays with, his toys and everything around him, is relatively safe as well, as much as we can make sure. I guess the other things you want to do is what any normal parent would try to do, you know, block off the electric outlet so they won't go troubling them and the cupboards and stuff like that, so that the area will be relatively safe, and then allow him to have his freedom, his independence, to develop his personality.
Good. Very, very good, Janelle. And I know one question that I have had people ask me over and over and over, and I'll put it to you as well so that you can help allay some of the concerns and some of the curiosity that people do have. How do you change his pamper? How do you know for sure that you have gotten him all clean? Do you bathe him, or do you just use the regular wet wipes and clean?
Yes, I use the wet wipes. I clean him. Sometimes, you know, I may have to use more wipes than I would like to use or the average person would use. But you would clean the area, wipe it, maybe do it multiple times, but to just make sure that he's clean. At the end of the day, he's clean.
Right. I know in looking at some of the material from overseas, one of the techniques I have seen some parents use when they take their children out. So I have, you know, noticed that in some materials I've covered from persons living outside of Barbados, they tend to use a tether, which is like a device where they place it either around the child's wrist, and they have one attached to their wrist so that they're kind of kept connected. And some people use like a very small harness on the child. So again, that they're able to keep that child very close to them and, you know, not allow the child to stray away and then have to be constantly searching our aunts for someone else's assistance in locating the child. What are your thoughts about using a device like this?
Yes, I am very aware that going out places, I definitely would need to make sure that he is always close by. So I might actually consider the thing on the wrist. I remember when he was starting to crawl, I was a bit worried at first, saying maybe I should get some bells attached to his feet or something so I can know everywhere he is at all times. Luckily, I didn't need that because since our house is tiles, every time he crawled around, we hearing a squeak, squeak, and I knew exactly where he was. But yes, that is something we'll have to think about. Right now, I haven't had to think about that as yet. This COVID-19 thing, we really haven't been out. He's only a year, 13 months. So shortly after he would have been born is when we were tossed into this whole crazy COVID-19 mess. So as things cool down and as we will have to go out eventually, this is something we really have to put some thought into.
Okay, and as you mentioned, the COVID-19 pandemic, with the various restrictions and lockdowns and pauses, how have you coped, one, as an individual, and then as a mother with a young child, that generally we tend to take children out, you know, to introduce them to the whole concept of socialization with their environment, the various environments. How have you been coping?
Initially, I was a bit disappointed, you know. He wasn't able to meet a lot of his family. He still hasn't been able to meet a lot of the family. And I just wanted, you know, everyone to meet him, for him to get to know a lot of people, the people that are around us, that usually are around us, I should say, outside of COVID-19. But that hasn't been able to happen. Being at home, for me, it wasn't a huge problem. When I was doing master's, I was studying online. So I would have done that from at home. Being at home with Johan, who's my son, well, it was a bit challenging to study at times and be with him. I have a lot of support at home. So there was always someone to jump in and offer assistance when I needed it. So the COVID-19 lockdown hasn't been that much of a strain on me per se, but I'm aware that it was on a lot of people.
Okay, Janelle, it really has been enlightening chatting with you. And you know, generally when you're having really good conversations, when it comes time to part, there's a little disappointment because you want to continue the conversation. So what I will do is promise you that we have to get back together and continue the conversation, really, because I think it's really important to share our thoughts around what experiences we have in the educational system, the health system, because we haven't even touched that in terms of your antenatal care and postnatal care and so on. And of course, being a young mother. So I really want to thank you for expressing your thoughts so openly and so fearlessly.
And thank you very much. And thank you very much for having me. I look forward to continuing our conversation.
Thank you once again. You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham-Ashby, and today my special guest, Janelle Odom. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300 via email at visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That is VISIONSBARBADOS, the @ gmail.com. And of course, you can listen to this and past episodes on the VOB929.com website. So until next week, be safe, continue to be productive, and love yourself.